Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It is Tuesday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Bold, the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Oh, yes. I thought you were going to start it with, "Are you ready to rumble? Introducing my first contender, Lawrence McKenna."
Hi.
That was breathtaking, Dave, yeah? Is all I can say. You can
away.
Do all of the intros from now on. Maybe not on second thoughts. Guys, welcome to the front three. Thank you very much for listening. We're here to talk about Roy Hodgson. We're here to talk about the Euro 2016 quarterfinals coming up this week. And of course, all the latest transfer news and all that good stuff. Let's start with Roy Hodgson, though, Lawrence.
Must we?
We must.
Do we
briefly.
Really care?
I do a little bit. I have to admit, it's the morning after the night before, when England were humiliatingly dumped out of Euro 2016 after an insipid performance, I think we described it as last night. Roy Hodgson sort of wheeled out in front of the media today, even though he's not the England manager any longer, as far as I know. And Roy Hodgson wasn't quite sure why. He came out and said, "I don't know what I'm doing here, Lawrence." Now, a lot of people use that as a stick to beat him with. Do you have any sympathy for Roy Hodgson? He was getting a little bit worked up in the press conference. He was a little bit tetchy, but you know, is that misplaced? Is that, you know, unfair?
Do any other managers have a post resignation press conference? I don't think I've ever seen a post resignation press conference. It is a bit unusual. It's like he's done his resignation thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, why are you doing this? Like, it's just weird. People,
his quote was, "I don't really know what I'm doing here. I thought my statement last night was sufficient. I'm no longer the England manager. My time is gone. But I was told it was important that I appear here. I guess it's partly because people are smarting from the defeat last night that saw us leave the tournament. I suppose someone has to stand and take the slings and arrows that come with it."
No, but that's the point. Like, there's so much just nullifying of potentially awkward situations. Let them ask the questions. Let them throw those things, because we're going to see what people were actually doing wrong. We're going to have questions asked. And the FA have put him out there to be the fall guy.
It was a bit of a car crash, it has to be said. I did feel a little bit sorry for us, as you said, to be wheeled out there to sort of take the brunt of it. However, he was flanked by the FA CEO. Let's find his name here. Martin Glenn,
Chief Executive
of the Football Association, who came out with a rather brilliant quote of his own, which was that he's not a football expert.
Brilliant.
He said that twice, and he followed that with, of course, he will be on the three-man panel that chooses the next England manager, which was just so far.
I just came out here to let everyone know that I'm no football expert, but I think it's probably best that I pick the next guy to be the England manager. It's at a time like this where we need to be thinking with our pockets and our wallets, not with our heads like we need to.
It all sort of, you know, Roy Hodgson didn't come off well, not only because of his the sort of attitude he brought to it, but also because he sort of said, you know, all these things happen and, you know, England will come good eventually.
These things do happen. That's the whole point of tournament football. You can go out to a side like this.
Roy Hodgson the same way. The last three times he sort of points to these, you know, they almost feel like he's pointing to sort of like special circumstances. But his decisions and the way he has set up his team have led to those things.
Definitely, but I'm also hearing very unusual things. I mean, do you see the quotes from the Iceland players today?
Come on, hit me.
Did you see, I'm bringing it up right now, Adam, so fill a little more time. Let me find it. It says, here we go. They, Iceland, are not going to do anything in this competition. Which Euro 2016 player said that?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Correct. Now, which player from Iceland quoted Joe Hart in saying, come on, lads, we'll have to be better than this against France?
Ooh. Sigþórsson.
I don't know who the Iceland player was, but it was Joe Hart saying it. And then apparently Harry Kane asked the referee when going out for the second half, do we go out if we don't win this?
Are you mad?
Yeah.
What?
Harry Kane. Come on, Harry, you're better than that, mate.
You are better than that.
Are you, though?
It is. I mean, it is all thoroughly depressing, though, isn't it? You know, sort of seeing the farcical. It was like something from, you know, The Thick of It, when you sort of see Roy Hodgson wheeled out there and just sort of how inept the FA is, really. I mean, you were sort of pointing to the arrogance yesterday in England's failure, Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
And although I don't necessarily agree, you sort of saying about how England sort of believes itself to be lovable in a way, and England wants everyone to like us, and I'm not sure I agree with that, but I would say arrogance is part of the problem. But when you see,
okay, let's not say lovable, but let's say righteous and right, and, you know, the people who are sort of who are always correct. So it's like there's a way of doing it. We made the rules for this game, and we can fuck it up if we want.
You took that quote from Joe Hart. You're talking about that there. You know, there's a story of Roy Hodgson going on this boat trip. Do you hear about this?
No, I've missed a lot of this stuff. Go on, hit me.
So apparently, Roy Hodgson, instead of going to see Iceland in the flesh, which he had the opportunity to do, he decided to instead go on a boat tour of Paris because his assistant manager had never been to Paris.
Brilliant.
So they decided to go off gallivanting about.
They clearly never seen Iceland either, but hey.
Yeah. You know, they sent their scouts and, you know, just that sort of story in itself.
That
just speaks to, I think, what Lawrence talked about yesterday. He's talking about the arrogance of it.
Mm. Yeah, but it's also important. Yeah, but I mean, that's also important to say. If you send a team of scouts, you'd imagine that team of scouts should. We didn't employ Roy Hodgson for his eagle eye to be able to go to every game and pick out the tactical intricacies of the other side.
Yeah, but he should.
No, but they knew, right? They knew that they were playing Iceland. Did they not play before Iceland? They played before Iceland, so they had the opportunity to watch Iceland. Is that not absolutely mental?
Yeah, but
as a coach, you don't want to see what your opponent does.
Yeah, but Dave, you've already bored yourself to death by watching your own team play. Could you want to go and see two teams at a tournament?
Do you want to go on a boat trip?
Or do you want to go on a boat trip down what most people would say is the insane river, Dave? Hmm?
Okay, I understand, Lawrence. The boat trip is more important than scouting.
Yeah, well, it's also a nice piece of wordplay about the French river, but fair enough, Dave.
And having the chief executive out there from the FA, this Martin Glenn guy, sort of coming out with these quotes, again, it just highlights how inept the FA is. And, you know, we're just going to have this inquest again. We're going to start talking about how not enough English players play in the Premier League, not enough eligible to play. Is it only 30-35%? The English League doesn't have a winter break, the failures of grassroots, all this sort of stuff, and nothing's going to get done again because the FA are in charge. You can't help but feel there's a culture of, it's like a culture of greed more than arrogance, it feels like. Not just at the FA, but just in English football in general. That's what it's all about. That seems to be what people are, the whole game is pointed towards, essentially.
I think it's all reflected on the whole thing, right? You know, the fella says he's not an expert. Roy Hodgson says he doesn't know why he's here. the players can't be bothered to do some running in a game of football. It's just systematic. It's a systematic failure of the whole institution. It just seems absolutely crazy that no one's come out there. And one, who's taken responsibility? Surely if you've selected this man to manage England for two tournaments, you've got some responsibility and you have some sort of accountability that you have to answer for. Have we heard any of that? Or have we heard finger pointing and blame to Roy Hodgson?
That's the thing. When did, you know, when Greg Dyke came in, he set up this commission and they were supposed to, well, they did really sort of, you know, point to the heart of what is wrong with English football and try and come up with these initiatives.
Have you read that document? I have, and it's
brought that big manifesto, right? But why? They made all that effort and they spent all that money to try and investigate, and they came up with these solutions, which are just completely shouted down. Now you're saying to me, Dave, that they're shit.
Mm. There's nothing. There wasn't anything there. There wasn't anything like, we are going to do it this way, we're going to do it this way. It was, we need to improve. There was no end philosophy behind this thing. It's just a load of shit. It's like, yeah, we need to get better, guys.
So there were no tangible solutions.
Yeah, I imagine them standing up and sort of going, we need to get better at football.
Well said, well said.
And everyone just applauded and went, brilliant. We will say that to the public.
I feel like he did. I'm not saying they were great ideas, but he sort of, you know, oh, we need B teams. We need to bring in B teams. We need quotas for English people, things like that.
So
why?
Stupid. Because the English system's never had B teams. It works in Germany, it works in Spain, it works in other countries, because that's inherently been in the game. We have a very competitive football league, which should be producing talent.
I mean, that's the point, is that actually, that there is quite a deep football league. But some people would also point, I mean, most people aren't pointing to the problem of maybe the disjunction between the way the Premier League works and the way that the England team work. But it tends
to... That's what I feel like is the main... It felt like if people come up with these sort of solutions, they invariably tend to almost threaten the Premier League's...
They tend to
like,
not
ability.
Bite the hand that... What was that sentence?
Yeah.
The hand just... that fucks. Yes. No one bites the hand that fucks, Adam.
Exactly. No one bites the hand that fucks, guys. But, you know, when... Yeah. The FA has sort of completely failed to confront the Premier League or sort of deal with it is, to sound like Lawrence, to borrow a phrase from you, Lawrence, it's almost like rampant capitalism. There's a lot of greed and corruption at the heart of the game. And they've shown they have no ability to confront that.
Because they were hamstrung. They hamstrung themselves years ago when they became complicit with it.
And that's what's so depressing, that nothing will ever change, because from 1992... The FA and English has got themselves in a situation where we're just sort of fucked now.
because stuff can change. Because essentially there will be changes. And this is what's ironic, is that the people in Europe are trying to change the laws so that the rampant capitalism which is currently appearing in England may be curtailed in some way, and we'll have some sort of control over the fat cats who are currently out of control. Now, there are a couple of guys at the top who are leading us the wrong way, and some people might say they're lying to the public and trying to get them to, I don't know, to coin a phrase, vote out in some way. Or, if you will, Adam, in many ways, the Premier League took a Brexit from the rest of football.
Exactly. That's why it feels so depressing, because of, you know, it's not just football, it's... In politics now, we see these people who sort of want the power, they want influence, and they're trying to, they're spreading these politics of greed almost. And like you said, they're going to lie and essentially disregard everyone else for their own sort of individual gain. And it feels like if that's society almost top to bottom now, we got ourselves in this mad situation, not just in football, but in England, in the UK, then how's anything ever going to change? So even on
something called a revolution, Adam.
What are you suggesting nowadays?
Nothing, Adam. Absolutely nothing.
We're starting a march tomorrow.
We're not going to Greg Dyke's house tonight, and we're not going to take a shit in a bag, in a paper bag, set it on fire, and go run.
Definitely don't think that's the way that other revolutions have started, but fair enough.
I was waiting to hear what Dave was going to say, and I was like, wow, that's...
Dave, this is really deep. Yes, you're right. I believe that Che Guevara was the first guy to take a shit in a bag and then throw it at the American president's door.
It's all just the whole situation.
Guevara used to just keep people up all night and fucking shoot them. He was a horrible bastard.
Yes, but he was also a revolutionary, Dave. I also quite enjoyed Roy Hodgson's quote that he said earlier in the tournament, where he said that someone would pay, because he was like, we've been knocking on the door for the entire tournament and we're going to make someone pay soon. And then it was like, oh, God.
They were just awful all tournament. And I know Roy's getting a lot of stick and he does deserve the criticism, but like we saw saying yesterday, the problem's bigger than him, because there was a mad stat during the round yesterday that since 1966, when England won the World Cup, England have won 6 tournament knockout games since then. That's it. Germany have won 6 tournaments, full stop. So it's not just Roy Hodgson, although he is getting a lot of stick today. It was the same with Capello. It was the same with Sven, as we were saying. It's just never ending.
Yeah, but Capello had some great ideas. And they were just institutionally rejected by the England players. It was like, sorry, you can't have your phones. And the players were like, oh, God, we can't have our phones. And then they were like, you can't have any fun. And then they were like, oh, this isn't very English. Gazza wouldn't have wanted this. Where are the pipes? Everyone changes. Right. As if some, because there's just this blind optimism and this sort of blind idea that it's like, oh, well, as long as we keep doing the same things, in the end, it'll all go well. Because people, again, falsely believe that England have gone down the right route in some ways for a while.
God. Why don't we talk about some teams that are actually good and have sort of got
Adam, why don't we talk about
together?
Harry Redknapp?
No, God. I don't think I could
the King
about,
Harry, who said France have got no game changers, bloody hell.
He has no faith in the FA instilling someone else at the top, and that he somehow thought that installing Pardew and Allardyce, who were two experienced managers, as he says, was less scary than Sven-Goran Eriksson.
Holy smokes.
Okay, it's another thoroughly depressing conversation, I think. But next England manager, then, it's all sort of been brought up today. Gareth Southgate is the front runner.
Brilliant.
Oh, my God. Have you watched the under 21s play football, Adam?
He's the messiah, Dave.
Rubbish.
He is the football messiah. Okay, that's why he's the front runner. Next up, unbelievably, is Glenn Hoddle. As he's the second favourite to be.
Do we remember? We do know that Glenn Hoddle's been England manager before, right?
Yeah. It beggars belief. Then third is Eddie Howe, which I think would be a more exciting appointment, but it feels unlikely. Why would he just? I don't know. I'd throw in the towel at Bournemouth for England.
Yeah. Why would you leave a club that everyone loves you at? Go somewhere.
The boys and chaps.
He already did that once, didn't he? He went to Burnley, really didn't like it, didn't get on, and then went back to, eventually ended up back at Bournemouth. So he's already made that mistake once, so it's unlikely to him for him to make that mistake again, right?
Yeah.
Totally. Alan Shearer, the fourth favourite, and Alan Pardew, the fifth.
Literally, just the people who we can make the most noise about. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. But looking down the list of the first 20 or so sort of most likely candidates, as the bookmakers have made them, I don't know if any of them make sense.
The thing
really
is, I don't understand why anyone is in any rush to...
They say they're going to appoint someone in 6 weeks, they say.
In six weeks?
That's what the FA says, which means... Probably going to be Gareth Southgate.
No one wants to go to the Russian... No one wants to go to the Russian World Cup anyway. Let's write that one off and spend a good few years just waiting.
Hey, lads, what do you reckon? Should we put the front three forward to manage England? I reckon we'll do that.
Yeah, we could talk about our little trifecta of management ability. I don't know how good we'd be, to be honest.
I think we'd be fucking great, Adam. No need to question that.
Who would be just, ideal, not realistic at all, who would be your ideal appointment, Dave? If money was no object, if contracts no object,
Dave's going to say something counterattacks.
Ideal.
Jurgen Klopp.
There we go.
Interesting.
A German.
No, actually, either Jurgen Klopp or Pochettino.
Pochettino. Yeah.
An Argentinian. A personal upgrade. I think that anyone, judging from the current media climate, anyone who's not English is going to get ripped apart.
I wonder. He hinted today in the press conference that it might not be an Englishman who takes over. He sort of raised that possibility, which I sort of thought was off the table, essentially, after Sven and Capello.
Sven was refining the manager. He fucked everyone. That was the problem with
him. He did. Yeah, in many ways. Claudio Ranieri, guys, I'm saying. Eventually, next season, maybe it all goes wrong. Bring him in as England manager.
Ranieri could be in
England. Everyone loves him. Everyone loves him in England. It could be a surprisingly popular point. It looks like it will be Gareth Southgate, though. Thoroughly depressive.
I think that's the thing. He should surely be interim manager, right? Allow him and Gary Neville to take charge of the squad for a little while.
They're just patsies, and they've got no authority because everyone knows, oh, these guys will be gone soon. You know, what does it matter?
I just imagine Gareth Southgate walking into the dressing room the first time and just being like, I'm sorry. Listen, I'm sorry, all right? I missed that penalty. And everyone's like, Gareth, stop talking about it. And he's like, I know it's all that everyone's thinking about, though. And everyone's like, Gareth, please.
Forgive me, guys. Forgive me.
He's a lovely guy. And, I think all of us have met him in real life. And he's very nice. I don't want Gareth Southgate to have the ire of the press on him.
Poor, he's had enough. He's dealt with enough.
Yeah, you've been through enough, mate. You sit down for a little while, all right? I don't honestly think England should just take their time.
Oh, dear.
Take your time over it. What's the problem?
I would love to see it happen, Lawrence, but it won't, unfortunately. Let's move on to something more exciting, a bit more hopeful. Let's talk about some good teams, essentially. I'm looking forward to these games. The quarterfinals are coming up. Some exciting fixtures. First up in the Euro 2016 quarterfinals is Poland versus Portugal on Thursday evening. What are your thoughts going into this one, Dave?
It's going to be a good game. I think both teams played very well. You know, Croatia, who were in some ways favourite for that side of the draw, really, really struggled against the Portuguese team that was well organised and changed their shape twice. But both shapes are very good. I like their diamond in midfield. There's a lot of work. The four central midfielders that go in there put in a big, good shift for them. Nani's looked all right. Ronaldo, wasn't the best against Croatia, but at the end of the day, came up trumps with the goal, with the assist for the goal for Quaresma. I just feel this Portuguese team could defend for a while. You know, William Carvalho really did a job on Rakitic, completely bullied him out of the game, especially in the first half. It just cut the flow to Rakitic, and when Rakitic got on the ball, he was touch tight, put a tackle in, and usually came away with the ball, distributed it to the left of the well. And then when you've got someone like Renato Sanchez on the bench, that 19 years old, is as strong as an ox, so good on the ball, technically brilliant, really good at through balls, good at beating a man. I loved his duel with Luka Modric. It was a sort of great battle. They were both going round each other and then taking each other out. It was just a great little spectacle to see. But I feel if Ronaldo and Sanchez get their communication a bit better, there were a few passes that Sanchez put into the channel when Ronaldo didn't go in for it, and then when he played the ball central, Ronaldo went to the channel. So they need to get that communication right with those two. I think Renato Sanchez has to start against Poland. On the flip side of that, Poland, a team that have been very, very good at defensively in this tournament, they've defended well. Pazdan's been brilliant, Glick's been brilliant, Piszczek's been absolutely awesome, and then Błaszczykowski has been, had the tournament of his life, been directly involved in every single one of the three Poland goals so far. He's just been awesome on that right hand side. I feel that's where Poland's real strength is, on the right. If they can get Lewandowski scoring, they can get him, he hasn't even had a shot on target yet, if they can get him anywhere near the goal and get him firing, they've got a very good chance against Portugal. But I think Portugal edge this one.
Shaqiri's pretty spectacular overhead kick. It's actually the only goal Poland have conceded in the tournament so far, Lawrence. So as Dave says, they're pretty solid defensively. Who are you tipping to go through?
I'm going to go, be a mistake to go against Dave's dark horses, wouldn't it? But I'm going to go Poland, because I think it'll be the first game where Levan gets a little bit of space.
Am I right in saying that the only shot on target Portugal had against Croatia was their goal? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think so. The game had no shots on target in normal time, so I imagine that would have been right.
I think I'm going to side with Lawrence and go for Poland.
Right. See how it is, lads.
Yes, you do, Dave. Yes. That's the nature of predicting.
What about Friday? We've got Wales versus Belgium. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but I was all up for cheering on Wales, the one home nation left in the competition.
Love Gareth Bale. That fucking video.
Yeah. I didn't love it, I've got to say. I think I probably... I'm torn two ways. Does it matter to you, Lawrence, that the Wales team enjoyed seeing England dump out? They really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think they enjoyed it a little bit too much, didn't they?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, just a little bit.
That's not banter anymore, is it?
They've crossed the line.
I think Aaron Ramsey is going to struggle to go back to Arsenal's side of London. Because the video just goes a bit far. It's a bit like, why are you that happy about it? Yeah. I'm not that upset about it. Why are you that happy?
Yeah, it was kind of, everyone was just like, oh, yeah, I know, yeah, it obviously was a very depressing video. No one was really surprised, and oh, you know, here we go again. But yeah, they were really celebrating that. A lot of people in TFR Towers thought that was fake today. They couldn't believe that the Wales team would, you know, go so overboard.
How could they think that was fake? I mean, sure, I mean, the Welsh players are in it. Are you saying it's like some sort of Snapchat story that's gone wrong?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's bizarre, really. But I mean, they are through to the quarterfinals, of course. They're facing Belgium, Lawrence, a team who sort of started to hit their groove somewhat after a shaky start. Wales, of course, they looked good against Russia, although Russia were awful.
Yes,
Northern
true.
Ireland didn't really test them all that much. Mm-hmm. So how do you expect them to fare against Belgium?
Good question. I think that one's a hard one, because I genuinely think Belgium are against Wales. Wales are going to struggle in midfield to counter what Belgium have. Wales have not faced a side. Wales haven't faced a side where I think they've been challenged in midfield properly yet, and I think for that reason, I think Belgium will go through, because I think they'll control the sort of the attacking midfield area. There's only so long Ashley Williams can hold out.
Of course, Wales did beat Belgium in qualifying, Dave, has to be said, but you know, that they sort of stifled Eden Hazard there, and he's sort of coming to the fore now. He's finally found a bit of form in the last few months, amazingly. Who are you tipping?
I think Wales are going to beat Belgium.
Yeah?
Wow.
Yeah, I think that Belgium have still got the inherent issues that they are very, but they'll be exposed to the counter-attack. And if Wales play this right and sort of sit deep and hit Belgium on the break, they're in for Belgium will be in for an absolute shock. The wide players don't track back. It's a very disjoint team. Four up front, six at the back and in midfield. Still very disjoint. You know, the result against Hungary, yeah, they beat them 4-0, but up until 78 minutes, Hungary were brilliant. Hungary put in a really, really good performance and were unlucky to get a goal and were unlucky to get beat 4-0. It was great to see Hungary in this tournament. You know, we wrote them off, everyone in the world wrote them off, but it's good to see a team that with such history, with the likes of Puskás and the 90s, 1950s Wunderbar team that came over and trounced England 6-3. I feel that it's good to see Hungarian football hopefully coming back onto as an uphill climb in a way, and hopefully that can inspire some young kids on the streets of Budapest. Adam, obviously you were there. Did you see anyone playing football out there?
No, actually, I don't think I did.
That's a shame. But yeah, no, I hope it does inspire.
So they've not inspired anyone then. No one is.
Not hungry fans. A lot of hungry shirts, even though they weren't playing on the day I was there.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I do find it. I find the preseason, the pre-tournament predictions a little bit weird at this point, because you sort of go, okay, fair enough. But looking at that team on paper, I mean, but that's fine. That's the whole point of pre-tournament predictions. It's like, we've not seen them play at the tournament yet. So how are you supposed to know how they're going to play? I don't necessarily think anyone wrote them off. I think it's just more that people sort of say, if you look at that team on paper compared to the other sides, those other sides, even in qualifying, are sides that you think can beat Hungary. And Hungary have sort of, I guess, played up to that and done that pretty well. I think some other sides probably underestimated.
Belgium have hit 8 goals without reply. Again, back to Wales. They've hit 8 goals without reply in the last 3 games, which doesn't bode well. You're going for Wales, though, Dave. Lawrence, you're going for Belgium?
Yeah, I'm going for Belgium, although apparently Nyangolan smokes, so I'm sort of against that.
Does he now?
Well, apparently, what, Mark Wilmot says... Smoking? Mark Wilmot says, did you know that I have to give him a window room? Because then he can, or a balcony room, because then he can smoke on the balcony or out the window.
That is a top-notch athlete, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
having a fig before the game.
There's not enough. There's not enough top athletes that smoke. England need a top athlete that smokes. If we had a top athlete that smokes, even on the sly, and maybe dug things out of bins around the back of a club, Jack Wilshere would be included in the England squad if he did that. That would be outrageous to include Jack Wilshere in the England squad on the current form and for saying that he was barely playing during the season. You'd have to be a mentalist to do that.
I'm going to go for Wales for the sole reason that Raja Nainggolan smokes. And I believe that will be the decisive factor in this game.
He's going to be trying to catch Gareth Bale. Imagine if it's him who's puffed out by the end of the game.
Gareth Bale is going to be through on goal and Nainggolan's going to be like puffed out, won't be able to get back to tackle him. It's happening. Watch that happen. And thank me later when you put on your bets. Moving on to perhaps the biggest game of the quarterfinals, Germany v Italy. Germany, of course, topped their group without conceding a single goal. Italy have been, well, after that first game, they sort of burst onto the scene and sort of took a few people by surprise because people were sort of down them, as we've talked about. A great performance against Spain, though, and people are saying the winner of this game could go on to win the whole thing. I mean, what do you reckon, Lawrence? Who are you tipping? I'm going to say, oh, God. You know what? I'm going to go Germany. I think Germany are going to go.
You're going to go Germany?
Yeah, I think both teams are solid defensively. But I think Germany are going to have that edge going forward, which is going to see them through, see them past Italy.
Yeah, because I think there'll be a draw in normal time. I think it'll go to extra time. Ooh. God, imagine that on penalties. Germany will win that. I think Germany will just about squeeze through. There is a little bit of belief, though, in this Italian team now that they've gone through against Spain. I mean, there's that element of sort of superstition around the side. People don't like to speak them up too much in Italy. And then, you know, now they're beginning to perform. I think they've grown into the tournament. And people in Italy now sort of say, oh, well, now we could get it. But then I think De Rossi was reported to have limped out of the game the other day and limped out through the press zone. And then obviously Motta is suspended. So it does leave them with a bit of a midfield problem there. So I'm going to say Germany because I think Italy's midfield may struggle overall against this side, especially if De Rossi and Motta aren't playing. And Motta definitely isn't because he's suspended. If you listen to a number of European podcasts, then you'll know a really good one is Football Weekly. And obviously they've got not only James Richardson, who's an Italian expert, but also... what is his name?
James Horncastle.
James Horncastle. Good old Horno. And he... no one calls him that. And he was saying the other day how he'd spoken to Conte, and Conte had said he never felt he was a particularly good footballer. And it was very often that he would spend a couple of seconds on the ball and then the crowd would begin to boo him. And as the crowd began to boo him, you know, he'd sort of lose his head a little bit and he would end up making a poor decision. So what he likes to do is brief his players and essentially give them outs. And what he was saying was that you could see that in this Italian side, that, you know, they breathe together and they know where the ball needs to go. And essentially they were playing almost without looking at each other. And they said that's something that is a very Conte element to this side. And that, you know, whilst it doesn't lead them to be particularly charismatic at times or sort of pragmatic, it does mean that that they're incredibly efficient. And while they do know each other well, it means they have a lot of faith in the system. Having said that, I think Germany will go through.
On the plus side for Italy, as well as Conte's genius, Germany have never beaten Italy at a major tournament.
Ooh.
Never. They've drawn 4 and lost 4.
Why didn't you tell me that before, mate?
Well, you know, the past can only somewhat inform the future, but what more informs the future is the present.
Good.
Is that saying or something?
Not really.
Yeah. Dave, what do you reckon? Does the past or the present influence you more?
It's going to be a big, big game, especially that. I think that central midfield issue is going to be a big one for Italy. There's no one really in the squad that can sit there. Maybe Storaro, but again, he's more of a shuttler than someone that can sit in front of a back four. So Pirlo, again, he's very, you know, more offensive midfielder. And same with Giaccarini. So I think that's going to be an issue. Whether they're going to go outside the box and play someone like Benucci there, maybe, or Matteo Darmian, you know, really go outside the box. But it's going to be a big decision that is going to have to be made by Conte. For me, I think Germany are going to be too good. I think that Spain got caught out because they weren't very efficient in how they were pressurising the Italian back three, thus giving the Italians easy out balls from...
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From goal kicks, I feel that Germany aren't going to be like that. I feel like Germany can be deal with Pelle and Eder, their centre-backs. I think they'll be suited more to play those two, you know, the likes of Jurrien Boateng and Matt Hummels. I think they'll be more suited to face them than Piqué and Ramos. Piqué and Ramos were a little bit too rash. Whereas I feel that Boateng and Hummels will sit off a little bit more. Then they've got better quality from fullback as well, Hector, and the fella that plays Kimmich have had great tournaments going forward. Julian Draxler as well. You know, when they played Spain, there was no one really running at them, no one really drawing people in. You saw Julian Draxler against Slovakia was absolutely awesome at that. Completed 8 take-ons in the game. It was something like 6 more than any other player on the pitch. It was an insane. And his assist for the goal was brilliant. I feel like he could be the player, the X factor that Germany need to sort of unlock this deep Italian defence. And also, you've still got runners in there. If they do need to go route one, they've got Mario Gomez and Thomas Müller. So they can pack the box if needs be. And Julian Draxler, again, isn't the smallest lad. He's a big chap. I think he's 6'2". So I feel like Germany have just got so much variation in their attack that I think they will find a way to get through this Italian side. But this Italian side's done so well already.
We're all going for Germany then. Interesting one. Germany going through our pick. Finally, we come to France versus Iceland. Now, this is an interesting one because we've got France, a team that I don't want to say they've underachieved, but maybe underperformed slightly. There's been a few sort of late goals that have flattered some of their games. And of course, you know, going behind to Ireland, they were on the ropes until Griezmann sort of stepped up. You know, there's question marks over this team essentially, whereas you look at Iceland, who have massively overachieved, you know, dumped out England, of course, last night, which makes me think it's a tough one to call. I know France are obviously their favourites on paper. What do you reckon, Dave?
I think it's if Griezmann plays off Olivier Giroud, it's definitely going to be France. I think that's the factor there that could really change this game. But if they don't and they play that 4-3-3, Iceland could beat them very easily, you know, the similar way how they beat England with some lovely passing football for one of the goals, but then just a long throw. Long throws are simple to defend when they're coming. England looked like they were underprepared for that situation. Will France be maybe as well? It's going to be a big question in central midfield. Who do they go for, Matuidi, Pogba, or Kante, Pogba? Probably will be Matuidi, Pogba, I think. But then to do that with Griezmann in attacking midfield, they've got to be wary of if one of them presses or one of them goes, the other one has to sit. They need that relationship to be alive. Patrice Evra looked a lot better when Matuidi was playing left central midfield, especially in that second half. It looked like he was covering a bit better. So I think there's a lot of questions for this French team, but Deschamps has got to make these calls. I think Dimitri Payet as well. Potentially he's got to go on the right. He's a little bit too one-dimensional on the left-hand side. And then again, Anthony Martial has to start for me. He would give France a lot more. And again, Kingsley Coman came on. It was Kingsley Coman, who's flash, who does the tricks, but doesn't do it in the final third or doesn't really make things happen. So I think it's got to be Anthony Martial, Payet, Griezmann, off Olivier Giroud, Pogba, Matuidi in midfield, and then the back four and keeper that's been for the whole tournament. And that'll beat this Iceland team.
1992, Denmark. 2004, Ooh. Greece. 2016, Hello, Wales. No, Iceland.
Oh, right. Yes. 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 Do you actually think they can do it, Lawrence?
I think because of the curse of the 12s, yes.
Yes. I am with you 100%.
Good. Could it be Iceland? Could it be Poland? Could it be Portugal?
A Portugal underdog enough?
They are.
Count?
Kind of.
I don't think they count. I don't think even Poland count. I think if Wales or Iceland win, they count.
Okay.
It's continuing the. Did you say curse? Is that the way you said it?
Sort of.
What's a nicer word?
Aware of it. Curse?
Just the.
The luck of the pattern. 12. The pattern.
Trend.
So there you have it. We're divided on a lot of these games. But I think they're going to be fascinating nonetheless. I think the tournament is getting better as it goes along, essentially.
Who's gone out that you miss already? Like, you know, who's been the, of all the 24, because we're now down, we've got a third of those now. Who do we miss?
Not England.
No, not England. No, mate.
Definitely not England. Don't miss them. What's
Croatia were good. Croatia were a good side.
Yeah, I was disappointed that they didn't. Disappointed by them, to be honest, because I thought they'd have too much for Portugal. Obviously not. Ireland, I'm sad to see Ireland go, of course.
Yeah.
They were going so well in that game as well. It was all going swimmingly. And then
such high expectations for Austria.
Yeah, Austria. I don't know if I'm sad to see them go, though, because I don't know how much they offered. I don't know if I'm... Yeah, apart from Ireland, I guess. And maybe Croatia. I don't know how sad I am to see another team go, because I didn't see anything that maybe missed them, essentially.
Albania gave France a run for their money.
Yeah.
I'm glad Will Griggs has finally been put out. You know, he's been on fire for a bit. He must eventually get a bit sick of being on fire, right? Can't do any normal things. Walk
Did
around the
he
house.
Play?
Go
Did
and
he
make
play?
Some toast. I've already burnt the toast.
Yeah.
Poor fella.
I wish...
Did he play at all?
No. Do you think there's any sort of worry that...
A single minute.
Do you think there's a worry that Will Grigg will sort of be cursed by this because... You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't play a single minute, is that what we're saying?
Hold on.
Not as far as I remember. Well, I don't remember Will Grigg being on the pitch.
Will Griggs did not play a single minute.
I think you'd remember that on Twitter, wouldn't you? You remember on Twitter when he came on.
I just don't know. I saw Will Griggs everywhere. I assumed he played for like a minute or something. That's hilarious. He didn't get he still got the biggest reception back in Belfast though when they all came back.
Of course he did. Mediocre. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I know why it spread.
He failed to make a single appearance at the Euros.
There you go.
Jeez, the curse of the Will Griggs song.
He's still young enough to be able to appear at the next Euros though. So,
With that then, let's move on to a little bit of transfer news and the like. That's been going on today and this week. First up, Sadio Mane has left Liverpool. Sorry. He hasn't left Liverpool, guys. He's left Southampton.
I thought you were coming out with some really bad news then.
Yeah, he joined today. It's all over, lads. It's all over. No, he's, of course, left Southampton for Liverpool. The fee is £34 million, reportedly.
Roughly.
Now, some chatter about this move on. It's being somewhat overpriced. People saying, you know, God, if Mane's worth that much, if he's worth 34, how much is Mahrez worth? All this sort of stuff. Do you think it's a good move for Liverpool? Are you excited to see him at Anfield?
I mean, I guess I am a little bit excited to see him at Anfield because, you know, he's an exciting player. What I am worried, I mean, he's not, it's Senegalese players haven't set the world alight at Anfield before. I mean, apart from Traoré, who, of course, won a Champions League with Liverpool. But they have hardly set the world alight. So it's a little bit worrying to sort of think, you know, what's this next Senegalese player going to do? However, let's not judge him before he's even here. He's worth much more than a mediocrely priced Senegalese player who's just had one good tournament. And he fits into the Klopp system. Klopp had apparently told him he was very welcome and they wanted him to play at Liverpool. And he instantly said yes. And, you know, I think Liverpool offered the right amount. I just, you know, Klopp must have really badly wanted him because what's the point in bringing in another winger that you just won't end up playing? They've got some guys who are reasonable in that position already. Why not? Why would you go for someone else? I think he is going to bring another option to Liverpool. You know, I think the biggest question is that price tag. And obviously that means that there's a couple of other players who may be leaving Liverpool. Maybe it means that the likes of Ayew will be allowed to go. You know, are we looking at a new destination for Lallana, or maybe another creative player a bit further back that maybe allows Klopp to play someone a bit further up, like a Joe Allen, who's apparently already been subject to an £8 million bid from Swansea. And then Lucas, of course, who's not really an advanced player, but apparently will be allowed to leave in Anfield this summer.
Where do you think Mane could fit in among Liverpool's attacking options, Dave? Because, of course, he's a player who was linked with Manchester United for a long time as well.
Yeah, I think it's what Liverpool go with next season, because they've got quite a lot of talent attacking midfield. I feel that, yeah, there is going to be some movement out of Liverpool, whether Lallana does go, or, you know, whoever they get rid of someone else, or even Coutinho leaves. You know, that could still happen. You know, had a pretty decent copper, scored that hat-trick. So there's still going to be clubs around there. PSG have obviously been linked with him in the past. But I feel that Mane's, you've got to play him. I feel that you've got to be at attacking midfield or on the left, on the right, whatever. He's just got to be in the team. I think you've got to play Mane in different positions against different opposition. You know, that their left-back's a bit of a slouch. Play Mane on the right-hand side. If their left-back's a slouch, you know, flip it round, you know what I mean? Or attack a midfield. If there's an option there for Liverpool to play direct play with, you know, for example, Origi. So play, you know, Lovren to Origi very straight and then have Mane running off there. That's another very good option. What he's a talented, talented player and can finish, can create something out of nothing. So Liverpool have got a really, really good player there. I think it sounds like Liverpool fans are a bit, in a way, upset about this signing. Oh, it was too much money, but that's the market. You forget that, what is he, 24 years old?
I don't know if they're upset. I do think, though, he doesn't sort of fit maybe what people expecting Klopp to sign, because, you know, they looked at what was done at Dortmund and all those kind of things, and maybe he doesn't fit that exact ilk of player.
A young player that presses, that's very good on the counter-attack, that's good with the ball at his feet. For me, he's the perfect Klopp player, just because Klopp's not, can no longer go and fish Europe for stars, but it's going to be, I think.
Exactly. Liverpool have always sort of struggled with audacious strikers when they've come in, because they've always sort of thought, okay, well, you've got big boots to fill at this club. And I know he's not necessarily a striker, but, you know, there are some players at the club who have struggled because of this. You know, in recent years, we've seen Ryan Babel. You know, before that, there were players like Steve McManaman. Liverpool before that had a great generation, or bought in a great generation, the likes of John Barnes, Peter Beardsley, those kind of guys, who all played in essentially that generation's version of this position. And, you know, those guys are fantastic. I always just think there's a sense when you get to Anfield of, right, go on then, live up to what the expectations are. And I think people always reserve judgment at this point, because in previous years they've been disappointed by some of the guys who have been in that position. I think that's why. It's not necessarily that people are sort of disappointed. I think it's that in many ways people want to reserve judgment at this point, because a lot of people have also been made to look a bit stupid by some of their predictions at times.
I think with that as well, in terms of where Mane's progression has come, going with Real Salzburg, then to Southampton, then to Liverpool. He's played in the Premier League before, hasn't he? And I think that's a big thing that puts the value up, because he played in the Premier League. There's no time for adjustment. And one big thing that Liverpool are going to get from that is potentially 6 points against Southampton, because last season in the Premier League, he scored one to draw the game away from him, I think, and then he scored two at St Mary's that won, that got Southampton the 3 points. So there's some instant points that Liverpool are going to pick up. You know, Sadio Mane is a player that decided to turn, well, especially at Southampton, turned up in the bigger games. Whether he's going to translate that to less sporadic form at Liverpool, where he's every week he's causing teams issues, then that might work. But at the moment, it was the bigger games, because he wanted that big move. And that is the other question Liverpool fans have got to ask. Is this just a stepping stone to the likes of Real Madrid, to the likes of Barcelona, to the likes of, you know, maybe Manchester City?
Ooh, did you know that Liverpool have paid Southampton £92 million since 2013. At that time, they've gone from second to eighth.
Yes.
Direct correlation.
Yeah, there is it's definitely down to the spending and not the turnover of managers, etc., etc., the writing of a club that was...
Glad you've finally seen the light, Lawrence. On Southampton, though, of course, this follows Victor Wanyama leaving last week, and, of course, Ronald Koeman departing the club. Do you think this is a worrying sign for for Southampton, Dave, or is this the same as last time this happened when Pochettino left and a raft of their talented young players also departed? They're going to rebuild from this and they're going to come back, if not stronger, then, you know, they're going to be able to sustain their current level of success.
Yeah, they always have a plan at Southampton, and that's why the club's been run so well. They'll be fine with this. This is fine. This is a standard summer for Southampton. They have already planned what they're going to get. They've already signed Nathan Redmond, a decent enough replacement for Sadio Mane. You know, young English player it's a different replacement. I think that's the thing. It's Southampton don't replace like for like. Jordi Classi came in when Morgan Schneider went to Manchester United. Very different player. Mane's an attacker, a forward. Nathan Redmond's a winger. They're replacing it with a different player, which is a good thing because that means the side moves on. The next manager that comes in has different tools, so therefore potentially can't be judged on the same light as the previous manager, which again is quite a good thing for their system. So I don't worry for Southampton at all. I think they are absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly. Klopp's been tracking Mane since the Olympics in 2012 or something.
Tracking him down. Speaking of Mane and sort of inflated fees we mentioned there, Crystal Palace have reportedly agreed a £31.6 million fee with Marseille for the Belgium striker Michy Batshuayi.
The name that everyone struggles to say. Can I just say one final thing about that? Mane is going to fit in just fine in Liverpool, because you know the way that they say names in Liverpool is, oh, you know, ah, Dave, you know, ah, Adam, and this guy is going to bring a top class label name to the city. Armani.
Armani. Yes.
Very good. Very good. I love it. Armani.
And now it's Arbashuari.
Bashuari. He's going down South London. Bashuari.
Bashuari. Yeah.
I mean, he's not agreed terms, and it doesn't sound like he's particularly aware of the deal, but I think everyone else has agreed.
But he reportedly is yet to decide on where he's going to go, because West Ham are interested, Juventus are interested, Spurs said to be interested. It sounds like, you know, everyone will have to sort of match this bid of 38 million euros, 40 million euros, and then he'll sort of decide his future. It's hard to see him wanting to go to Palace over, say, Juventus, West Ham or Spurs, for example. But it does, again, speak to that point we were talking about a few weeks ago with Troy Deeney and even with Mane today about the amount of money these Premier League clubs have now. I mean, we're talking about Crystal Palace. They're also looking to try and sign Steve Mandanda, apparently, and also Andros Townsend. They've apparently activated his £13 million release clause. So it's going to be a mad summer. I mean, we usually talk about the big clubs splashing the cash, but everyone is going to be going to town, it seems. Palace are close to agreeing a deal on Mandanda, on a free transfer, although Chelsea remain interested. So, it's just going to be mad.
It is a pretty fascinating summer, isn't it?
Yeah, just everyone's got the muscle, everyone's got the cash to spend big. So just like last year when we saw, you know, it's incredibly competitive league and anyone could beat anyone, and it was so crazy.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, we're talking as if, you know, it's only the Premier League competing with the Premier League. There are loads of other teams. Like you say, Juventus are in for a lot of these sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, Unai Emery's probably going to do somewhat of a rebuilding job now he's been installed at PSG.
Yes. Yes, he's officially taken over today. He's been pictured holding that shirt up.
That beautiful new shirt. And then, of course, there's also the movement of one striker who's refused to sign a contract.
Who is that?
Higuain.
Ah!
No!
That's Gonzalo, another one.
Adam. Yeah.
Gonzalo Higuain. Well, his agent has come out and sort of said he's refusing to sign a new contract. He believed, or, you know, when he joined the club, he was sold the promise of Champions League titles, Serie A titles. His agent sort of come out and said, you know, that's
he happened. Went, Napoli. You're at Napoli, mate. Like, you do.
Come on, mate. Get real.
Surely he should be contributing to that more than he has done. If he wants to win the Champions League, he's got to fire his team to the Champions League.
I mean,
right?
To be fair, Dave, he has scored quite a few goals.
He did score quite a few goals, but it just seems a weird one. Like, yeah,
he's got a record number of goals.
We were going to win the Champions League, and they lied.
He's done what he can. His contract runs out in 2018. He's not signing a new one, so maybe there could be a big bid for him this summer. maybe he could stay for one more year.
I think he's courting. I think they're definitely courting interest to see whether maybe Napoli will maybe improve his terms at the club, and whether Napoli will also be looking to bid on other people and bring in some other big names to go alongside him. Of course, you know, I know he missed some chance at Copa America, but at the same time, he showed a lot of quality while he was there as well.
I do wonder if his time for a big money move has gone, though. He's going to be 29 this year, and, you know, we always saw him linked to Arsenal for the last few seasons. Maybe if he's going to cost 50, 60 million, that time may have been gone. You know, there's younger strikers in the market that I think, you know, maybe provide more value. So I'm not quite sure if we'll see a big move happen, but looks like he might not be in Napoli for the long term, at least. What about Henrik Mkhitaryan, Dave? He's apparently set to join Manchester United. They've upped their offer. The Dortmund CEO has come out and said, you know, the situation has changed. Looks like the Armenian is going to be moving to the Premier League club. About 30 million is the report. 27 years old, obviously a highly regarded player. Do you think he's going to fit in well at Manchester United?
You know, first, before we even get into the player, I can't wait to listen to how the Manx are going to pronounce Mkhitaryan. It's going to be brilliant. You know, after
Mkhitaryan.
Surely, Dave, you just said it.
Tony Marshall. And then, it's, you know, it's just... Yeah, I think it's just going to be a struggle for some of the lads. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Mickey T or something like that. But no, he's a fantastic player, a creative player that United need. Someone that can play right wing, that gives pace to the side, can also play through the middle. So a lot of variation in where he can play, can score goals, can get assists, you know, 15 assists in the Bundesliga, four more than any other player, scored 11 goals as well. Three of those goals coming on the counter-attack. So he's a player that is geared to playing on the break. You look at all the goals he scored at Shakhtar Donetsk that season, a lot of them were him being played clean through on goal and finishing following a counter-attack. So he's a player that will fit Mourinho down to a T, works very hard, but what he can be is a bit frustrating. There was a game against Arsenal in the Champions League, I remember, where he must have had six shots on goal and three or four of them were 2, 3, 4, 5 yards out, and he whistled them over the bar. So he has that sort of flip to him. Sometimes he can be brilliant, sometimes he can be a bit frustrating. But, you know, hopefully Manchester United fans have learned a little bit with Angel Di Maria and Memphis Depay that you've got to wait a little bit for some of these players to get adjusted. Because, again, Mkhitaryan went to Borussia Dortmund. He had a pretty poor first season. Second season, he was awesome. There's a bit of patience that's needed from Manchester United fans, or, you know, it's going to be a flop of a signing again.
Elsewhere, Hulk is on his way to China, apparently. 55 million euros, I'm going to say.
Kind of makes a bit of sense, that, because he was in the J League before, I'm pretty sure. Right. So he used to play, in the J League for a number of teams. Tokyo Verdy was probably the most known team that we've probably heard of. But yeah, it's an interesting one. He's been at Zenit since 2012. He's never had that big move to the Premier League. So why not? Why not go to China? Why not cash in?
Roma are closing on Pablo Zabaleta. Looks like he's finally going to leave Manchester City. Dani Alves has finally moved to Juventus. That move's finally been confirmed.
Good for him. He looks good in the Juventus stadium. He was pictured in the Juventus stadium today, wasn't he?
A nice suit on, didn't he? Nice.
Yeah. He's going to look good in that kit. I'm happy for him.
Inter Milan are preparing another move for Yaya Toure. That one's been in the offing for years, it seems. And finally, Robbie Brady's in talks with Leicester. I like that.
Good lad.
The Irish hero.
He's the next Jamie Vardy.
The next Jamie Vardy. Let's bring it to an end there then, guys. Thank you so much for listening to The Front Three. Do remember, tweet us your questions, tweet us your thoughts at The Front Three on Twitter. You can also submit your reviews on iTunes. There should be a handy little link in the description of this podcast. Just click away and leave us either a 1 or 5-star review or anything in between. Just tell us why you enjoy listening to the podcast. The best one will get read out on The Front Three. For now, though, that's goodbye, Lawrence.
I think it is
until
goodbye.
Thursday night, after the first of those quarterfinals.
We might do a cheeky Q&A, but let's see.
Ooh, la la.
Might do a cheeky, Dave. And we might summarise, or we might, yeah, the stuff, maybe.
Ooh, it's broken up.
Oh.
What was that?
That was Eric Bay running on a treadmill, saying, wow. Can't wait to start as a Red Devil. Bang, Twitter news.
let me, before we go, let me tell you my little story of...
This bit's good. This bit, everyone quiet, everyone
it's not
quiet.
That good. So I was going to a stag do this weekend. It was my cousin's stag do. We're going to Budapest. As you know, I've been talking about, I was wandering the streets there. Great time, had a great time. But on Thursday, we were departing. Of course, there were the storms in the evening, and that night I was getting prepared, you know, trying to download some movies for the plane, that sort of stuff.
What movies did you get? What movies did you get?
I tried to get Creed, the new Rocky movie.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, doing a bit of work, making sure everything was in order for TFR for my 4-day absence. And by the time I saw, you know, got to bed, it was about 3 a.m. And I had to get up at 6 a.m. because I was going to vote in the referendum, you know, at 7 a.m. to get my train, all this sort of stuff. So 3 a.m. bed, 6 a.m. I'm going to wake up. 3 hours of much needed, but, you know, not really enough sleep. So anyway, go to bed at 3 a.m., head hits the pillow, eyes are closed for not 10 minutes, and I hear a squeak.
No.
Squeak. Uh-oh. And I'm like, what's going on here? My girlfriend's like, go back to sleep, it's nothing. No sooner does she say that, a mouse runs in from under the bedroom door to under the bed.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
I was freaking out. I'm not going to lie to you. I let out a scream. a high pitched yet manly scream. Jumped out of bed.
Okay.
Onto the floor.
Okay.
And I jumped on the floor. That obviously startled another mouse who ran in from under the door to under the bed. Oh. That's two mice under the bed. I'm freaking out. My girlfriend's freaking out. She's screaming. What's going on? I think I see another mouse. I'm like, what the hell? It's like an infestation. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So at that point, it's, you know, 20 past three, whatever. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do here?
You clean your house, you filthy bastard.
Well, come to that. So, 3 a.m., whatever. I'm like, what do I do here? Do I try and go to bed with potentially three mice under the bed? Do I try and, I don't know, sleep in the living room next door? Do I just leave these mice in here? They're going to be there for the next 4 days, and my girlfriend's here. She's going to be freaking out. I was like, I don't know what to do here. So, I decided, you know what? The primal urge came over me, the primal urge to kill.
Good.
So I decided to
move. You killed your girlfriend. Oh, right.
It was the only solution. No, yeah. I had to move everything out of the bedroom. Just absolute nightmare. Trying to move everything out. Tried to block off all the exits so these mice weren't going to get out. My girlfriend went to sleep on the sofa next door. I was like, I'm going to take care of this. So I started to chase down the mice. They're trying to escape, you know. I sort of herd them into this sort of dead end. What would you do? The mice are running around. You've decided to kill them. The urge is overtaking you, Lawrence, the need to hunt. How would you try and get the mice?
When you live in London, you get experience with mice, right?
They're here.
Did they have to leave at that exact moment?
Well, I didn't want to leave them in the bedroom of my girlfriend because I thought she's here for 4 days by herself. She's not killing anyone. The exterminators can come around tomorrow maybe. But I just thought, you know, this is, I'm going to deal with it right now.
I wouldn't know how to kill a mouse in that exact moment, but I have definitely struggled with mice block of flats.
My original thought was,
lads,
Dave, do you know, what would you have done?
Dave's going
to go to the kitchen. Yeah. I would have got the biggest pan that I had with a handle.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Gory.
I've got a tie. Tied it round the head like Rambo.
A thing that you're going to cook with later. Go on.
Then potentially another implement with the other hand.
Yeah.
Maybe, have you got a meat tenderizer?
Or maybe a carving knife, Adam. Maybe a carving knife.
No.
I thought those would be too inhumane, Dave. I know you're obviously,
inhumane?
To stab or pulverize a mouse.
Adam, did they not get in your grill? Did they not run into your room, get in your grill, step on your territory?
That was bad. What I decided to do was to try and cap, you know, like almost like a spider, put a glass over them, slide something under them.
You're never going to do that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought ahead of that. So I was like, I'll do that. And I was like, I can't really put them outside the front door. So I resolved that if I did catch them, I was just going to lob them off the balcony. I decided that's
brilliant.
It's more humane than Park right there.
How is that more humane?
Exactly. I didn't really think it through, Lawrence. Sorry, by the point, going a bit stir crazy. I was like, you know, this is going to work. So yeah, I'm running around trying to catch them with the glass. Like you say, Lawrence, they're pretty fast. Can't get them, you know. Eventually, I sort of herd them behind a cabinet. It's a dead end, you see, it was a trap. So, two of them are sort of herded into this very small crevice behind a chest of drawers. I block off the exit, brilliant. So they're trapped. So now they're trapped in their very small crevice. I'm struggling to see them.
I don't want to move the chest drawer away, because whenever I do, they sort of move, they get a bit fidgety, it looks like they're going to escape. What do you do in that situation?
Then you let them live under the chest of drawers and just pay some sort of subletting fee.
Good idea, not a bad idea.
Yeah,
going for the kill, Adam.
What came to my mind was the Hoover.
Brilliant.
I decided that was the only way to get into that crevice.
Have you got a Dyson?
It's more of a Henry-esque. A bit of a cylinder. It's got a bit of a cylinder in there. So my girlfriend expressed her doubt. She thought, you know, mice are going to get into that cylinder. They're going to get pulverized. I said, they may well do, but it's 5 a.m. at this point. We need to do this, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I sort of put the nozzle down there as close as I could.
What about the Hoover? Okay.
I put the Hoover nozzle down there.
Right.
You know, quite close to the mice. They couldn't move because they were in a dead end, essentially. They couldn't escape.
Yeah. Stop calling it a dead end, all right?
It was a dead end.
Yeah.
It was a trap, Lawrence.
Yes, I know.
And so I had that moment where I was like, you know, can I do this? Can I suck them up? Can I submit them to this death?
Jesus, one last treat for them all. I'm going to suck you all up.
No. So I thought, can I really do this? You know, it's not the best way for them to go. In the end, I could do it. Slammed on the power button. Sort of hoovered them up. Made a horrific noise. Like,
sure it did.
Awful. And then I was like, you know, sucking them up. I was like, I'd leave on for a little bit, make sure I've got them. You know, looks like they're gone. Look into the cylinder. Nothing there.
Did you play the Ghostbusters music?
No. Okay. Nothing in the cylinder, though. So they got stuck in the nozzle. They were stuck in. So what I decided to do was, you know, this is broken now. I've done what needed to be done. Took out the nozzle.
Throw the Hoover away.
Threw the whole thing in the trash downstairs. Dusted my hands. I was like, I'm done now. I'm done. You know, it's 5:30. I was like, I'm not getting any sleep tonight. You know, sweating absolute buckets, I've got to say as well. I'm chasing around. I was in a complete state. So I went back into the room and I just checked if there's one more, because I thought there might be that third one. Lo and behold, there's one more. The big mama. Jesus. Running around.
Motherfucker.
Jesus Christ.
Chop her head off.
The Hoover's gone. My weapon of choice.
Should call Dave at this point. Dave sounds like some sort of bloody chemical alley at this point.
Yeah, Adam, fucking mate, buy some mustard gas. Just get rid of it all.
The so effective before was gone. It was all gone. So I started chasing it around, and I thought the only way to do it is the glass again. So I heard it into a different dead end this time. I came very close with the glass. It was a little bit scared. I think it wasn't moving. So I was about 2 inches away from it, and I thought, this is it. You know, I'm going for the kill. Who's faster, me or the mouse? Actually, slam the glass down. Turns out, I was pretty fast, but the mouse was pretty fast as well.
Yep.
Slam the glass down in the middle of the mouse.
Brilliant. And it bit you. Did it bite you?
No, it just crushed it in half.
Oh my god!
Ooh, brutal. So, nice. Good kill, Adam.
It's not a good kill, Adam.
No, it was horrific. It was a pretty horrific image to pulverize that mouse in half.
I can't believe this wasn't a Snapchat story.
I know, it would have been incredible. But it was just, at this point, 6 a.m. by the time I caught it, you know, got rid of the mouse and the glass. Yeah, that had to go as well. And that was the start of my holiday. I thought, you know what, things can only get better from here. That was horrific, no sleep. Of course, the storms that night meant all travel was cancelled, missed my flight, all this. So it was pretty much the worst day ever. I thought it was a mildly amusing story of the mouse genocide that I committed. The exterminators are in now. I rang up the estate agent and was like, yeah, you know, there's three mice in the building. They're like, yeah, we know there's an infestation in your block. I was like, wow, thanks for
letting me know. I've not done anything about it yet.
Well, now they've seen the exterminators, but it's like, yeah, everyone else is complaining. I was like, yeah, well, do you want to tell us or send the exterminators round? I was like, what's going on? So, they got it, both barrels.
Just to let you know, Adam, the best way, I've had some pretty bad mice problems in my time in London.
How do you deal with it?
The best way, we got rid of, I think we probably killed a whole generation of mice. With the tunnels, you know, like there's a certain trap that the mice runs through and it gets poison on its fur and it pretty much kills itself. It's pretty grim. But that was the best method of killing mice. We tried it all, traps. Yeah, because they lick the poison on their fur and when they're cleaning themselves and then they die.
That's a more humane way too, though, rather than getting sucked up into a Hoover or crushed by glass. So I can see why your method makes sense.
I can't believe you sucked up.
That is pretty horrific.
Yeah, not the best way to go. And on that note, that brings an end to the front three. A nice little diversion for you there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you very soon.